Thank you, Jean-Marie, and the rest of the organization for inviting me and Enrico to present on the Dionysus study. I'll be focusing this presentation largely on in utero transfusions, and Enrico will then cover the postnatal variations that we found. And this is a study on hemolytic disease of the fetus and newborn, as Jean-Marie already said in French, if I understood correctly. And this was an international registry. To disclose, the Dionysus study is researcher-initiated and did not receive any external funding, but our research team did receive funding from Momenta Pharmaceuticals to perform research on HDFN. So to briefly cover the pathophysiology of HDFN, because that is important to actually understand the variations that we found in our study, you all know probably that HDFN starts with IgG antibodies that are actively transported across the placenta by FcRn, and there they may bind to the antigen-positive fetal red blood cells. And in case of, for example, anti-KEL, you can see an inhibition of erythropoiesis, and on the other hand, you can see hemolysis in, for example, cases with anti-D. And if the compensatory erythropoiesis is insufficient, then that may lead to fetal anemia. And if that is left untreated or remains undetected, then that develops further into hydrox fetalis or erythroblastosis fetalis. And if that is left untreated, that will lead to perinatal death. Luckily, we do have a treatment for that. And if the neonate is born, the neonate is still struck with the circulating IgG that still causes a continued hemolysis. And if within the first weeks of life, you'll see that the bilirubin increases until a hyperbilirubinemia or icterus, and that can lead to a Kern icterus. And on the other hand, you still have an inhibition of erythropoiesis, for example, due to the IUTs that we provide, and the neonate can develop a neonatal anemia. And based on this pathophysiology that was determined in the past couple of decades that this is the pathophysiology, we have several treatment options that we can provide. We can, for example, provide IVIG or plasmapheresis to the mother. We can provide IUTs to the fetus. We can plan delivery at a specific gestational age. And postnatally, we can provide phototherapy, IVIG, exchange transfusions, erythropoietin, red blood cell transfusions, and so on. So there are a lot of treatment types that we could provide. To give you a little bit more information, I'm from the Leiden University Medical Center, Department of Fetal Medicine and Neonatology, and we work very closely together with Sanquin and Sanquin Immunohematology Diagnostics, and the care for HDFN has been centralized within our country, so Sanquin performs the serological monitoring, and the LUMC performs the clinical monitoring and treatment of these affected pregnancies and neonates. And through that centralization, we rather know well what's going on within our own borders, but because of this, the rarity of the disease due to rhesus immunoprophylaxis since the 1960s, there's very little known from a large amount of centers across the globe, with, of course, the exception of a few larger centers. So we actually wanted to know what's happening outside of our borders. Do we all do the same, or are there any differences? So that is why we developed a multi-center retrospective observational study in which we aim to describe practice variations in the management of HDFN, antenatal and postnatal management, and the clinical outcomes of those that were affected. And through this data collection, we also aim to identify any opportunities to actually improve care directly. And we actually found a lot of variations, and we gathered a lot of data. Sorry for that, Paul. But this presentation will mainly focus on the IUTs, the techniques that were used by centers, the complications that we found also based on the technique that was used, and then the timing of the last IUT and the timing of delivery. And that brings us to the presentation that will happen later this afternoon, namely the postnatal practice variations and opportunities that Enrico will present. And I also wanted to touch upon, briefly touch upon in this presentation, the opportunity for delivery at a term age, so past 37 weeks and 0 days of gestation, and then Enrico will cover the effects of actually delivering those babies past 37 weeks and 0 days. So as I said, this was an international multi-center retrospective observational study, and we retrieved data from pregnancies that were affected in the past 15 years. And we collected data all the way from obstetric history until long-term outcome, if it was, of course, available. And that's also always a limitation of retrospective data. And together with 22 countries and 31 centers in total, we retrieved data from a total of 2,400, just go back, 2,400 pregnancies. And as you can see, most of the centers that participated in the study were from Europe, some centers from North America, some centers from South America, but we also noticed a large gap in Africa, Southeast Asia, and Eastern Europe as well, and that's another topic. But for this presentation, I wanted to focus on the 2,400 pregnancies that we included. And if we split them into the several groups that we have, you can see that 4% resulted in perinatal death. And that was largely due to severe hydrops fetalis and severe fetal anemia that was or was not managed with IUT. Then 56% of the cases received any form of antenatal treatment. More than 95% of those received an IUT. And then a smaller proportion, 40%, did not receive any antenatal treatment, but did receive, for example, phototherapy, exchange transfusions, or red blood cell transfusions. So jumping into the variations that we found, we first looked into the fetal access sites that were used in IUTs. And just to visualize it, we have the different techniques that could be used, and this is a placental insertion, so the insertion of the umbilical cord into the placenta, and that is one technique that could be used. You can also provide it intrahepatically by providing the transfusion in the intrahepatic vein of the fetus, and you can also do it in a free loop of the umbilical cord in the amniotic fluid, and you can also provide it intraperitoneally. And we found that overall, across all centers, 60% of the IUTs were done in a placental insertion. A smaller proportion was done in the intrahepatic vein, and 7% of the total 3,700 IUTs were done in combination with intraperitoneal transfusion. Then, and again, a smaller proportion was done in a free loop, and an even smaller proportion was done in the intraperitoneal cavity. And if we then have a look at the differences that we found between the centers, on the x-axis you'll see the different centers, and on the y-axis the percentage, and on the far right you can see which colors correspond to which technique. And if we then show the variations, you can see that there is a large variation across centers, in which on the far left you can, for example, see that some centers prefer to mostly use placental insertion, which also means that they do placental insertions if the placenta is posteriorly. But we also have centers on the far right that largely perform intrahepatic transfusions, which means that they also do intrahepatic transfusions across an anterior placenta. And we have a whole wide range in between. There were a couple of centers that also did intrahepatic and intraperitoneal transfusions combined, but that was just a small proportion of those centers. So as you can see, there's a considerable variation across these centers in terms of fetal exercise that were used. And from a consensus study done by Aaron and Ken Moise, they also found that Europe largely does intrahepatic transfusions and North America prefers to perform the umbilical vein at cord insertion. So that's also an interesting discrepancy between the two countries on the other side of the pond, as they probably say. So we then also looked into the complications of IUTs, and overall we found that of the 3,600 IUTs with data on complications, about 7% had a form of complication that was largely bleeding from the puncture site, emergency cesarean section within 24 hours, fetal death within 24 hours, procedure failure, needle dislocation, and a smaller proportion had matrinal complications that are more extensively discussed in our paper published in the Lancet Hematology. And if we then have a look at what gestation these procedures were performed, you can see that there's no difference in terms of non-lethal complications. So for example, bleeding from the puncture site in relation to the gestational age at which it was performed. But if you then have a look at the rate of fetal death across these IUTs, you can see that there's indeed, consistent with previous literature, a high rate of fetal death with early IUTs starting from about 23 weeks of gestations. And very importantly is that there was no fetal death in more than 900 IUTs performed after 32 weeks, with even some IUTs performed after 36 weeks of gestation. So that may be an opportunity to actually bridge the gap to term delivery. If we then have a look at the complications per access site, what we found was that, we specifically looked into the non-lethal complications, fetal death or emergency cesarean section, split or stratified for the access site that was used. And if we now focus on the non-lethal complications, you can see that there is a larger proportion of complications that occurred in intrahepatic or intrahepatic and intraperitoneal transfusions compared to the placental insertion and intraperitoneal only or free loop transfusions. Do take into account that we were unable to correct this analysis for BMI or placental location, but this is just an overall description of the complications that occurred with a 95% confidence interval. And if we then have a look at the fetal death within 24 hours, you can see that there is no difference across these different techniques. And if you have a look at the emergency cesarean section, you can also see that there's largely not a difference between the different techniques that were used. So if you would, what you could conclude from this is that there's a lower rate of non-lethal complications in intrahepatic transfusions, IUTs, I should say. We then also looked into the timing of the last IUT, whether that was different between centers. And as you can see here, the median gestational age at the last IUT was 32 weeks and about 4 to 5 days. But there was, a wide range across centers with a range of 4 weeks between the medians of the centers that participated. So there's also a large discrepancy between some centers that performed the IUT at, for example, just above 31, 32 weeks, and some centers that tend to perform IUTs past 35, even past 36 weeks of gestation. So there's also differences in the practice there. And we also looked at it differently. So what is the interval until birth? Well, the median interval until birth across all centers was 19 days, so about 3 weeks. But there was a range of 3 weeks between the centers, with some centers having the last IUT done just below 10 days before delivery, and some centers having it just reaching the 30 days. So again, there's a very large discrepancy between those centers. And very importantly, of course, gestational age at birth. And again, here we saw large variation, but overall with IUT, the median gestational age at birth was 35 weeks and about 5 days. And if you then have a look at the variations across centers, you can see that there's, again, a very large variation. And to just make it a bit easier, there was a 5 weeks difference across the medians of these centers, with some centers delivering the babies at about 34 weeks and some centers delivering them past 38 weeks. And the same we actually saw in cases without antenatal treatment, although a larger proportion of these babies were born at term age, but again, there was a very large difference across the gestational age at birth in these cases. So to conclude from this antenatal part, there's a considerable variation between centers in the IUT techniques that were used. And from those variations, we were able to deduce that there were fewer non-lethal complications in intrahepatic IUTs. There were no fetal deaths in 900 IUTs performed after 32 weeks and 0 days of gestation until a maximum of 37 weeks in which it was performed. And more than 2/3 were born premature, and there's a considerable variation across centers. And based on the fact that there was no fetal death in 900 IUTs after 32 weeks, we further looked into the effects of gestational age delivery on the short-term, but also the long-term outcome of babies. And that's going to be presented by Enrico this afternoon, so be there. With that, I'd like to give the floor back. Thank you.